Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, folks, to Hamp's Corner of America, a corner where your host, Codis Hampton II, hangs out with notable guests discussing topics of interest to you and yours. Milwaukee's 13th and Juno is where our host grew up, where his creativity and his imagination originated. Hamp's Corner of America is where we discuss, debate, and innovate. In the end, we will all leave with a sense of purpose. Come on, hang out with us. And now your host, Codis Hampton II.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Hamp. Here at the corner, we're pleased that you're taking the time to check us out. We are old school here, without disregarding the contributions of hip-hop to our current state of being. You will find that we often refer back to our past, as we do believe that if you do not know where you came from, you most certainly will not get to where you want to go. It is our hope that you will hang with us and our guest of the hour and even contribute to the discussion so that we may leave here having gained or at the very least enhanced our perspective on the topics of today. And by all means, have fun while doing so. Without further ado, let's get deep into it.
Hello, 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 folks. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're taking the time to join us. This program is brought to you by Hamp's Corner of America parent company, the Chia Group. You can check us out at www.chia.com, where you will also find how to order my latest book entitled Gracie Hall Hampton, The Arkansas Years, 1917 to 1953. You can also find my blogs on a regular basis at www.katararhythm.com. That's KATARA-RHYTHM.com. We will start our show with a song from a talented gospel singer, Yolanda Adams, today. It's from her Christmas with Yolanda Adams CD entitled Carol of the Bells, What Child Is This? With a host of musicians and singers in support. It's our Christmas show, so hang on. Here we go.
Peace in the bell.
beautiful song. We are back and ready to get into my interview with Mr. and Mrs. John Taylor from Antioch, California. My wife and I visited their home last Saturday. I mentioned my wife because she was sitting at the table during the entire interview. In it, you will hear me warning you, the audience, if she starts coughing. She had a little virus the week before. She will leave the room. Lo and behold, who started and had to muzzle their cough? You got it. Me. I have to crack up at the irony of my request. The main topic here is providing your children with a religious foundation on which to depend on. Then, now, and in the future. A foundation we think will serve them as they go through life and begin to form their own family. Here now is that interview with the Taylors. We always want to get first-hand knowledge of a topic from a qualified and trusted source. That is why I started the husband-wife team of John and Deetra Taylor. They raised their two boys into men, along with nieces and nephews, while providing a very stable environment of family. They credited all with the grace of God by ensuring their family stayed steeped in church activities. Having said that, we wanted to talk with them today to get an idea of how difficult that can be sometimes, especially today. They're not only fellow parishioners, but good friends of my wife and I. This provides me direct knowledge of them as outstanding parents and citizens in our East Bay area. First, let me say thank you for letting me come into your home and record this important discussion during this time of year. Let's start off by introducing yourself to our audience. Please give us your name, age. Just kidding. Will each of you give us your name, how long you have been married, and your favorite hobby? In other words, what makes you smile at just the thought?
My name is Deetra Taylor, and I'm married to a wonderful John Taylor. We've been married for 26 years. We've known each other for 33 years.
Hello.
We had a long courtship before getting married. Favorite hobby, spending time with friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Curtis. And first of all, I heard you say that we're a trusted source. So, my name is John Taylor, with my wife, Deetra, and I think we both put our trust in God, so he leads and guides us in the direction that we should go. That's where our trust is in. So it's good to hear that you say that we're a trusted person. We trust the man upstairs. Like Deetra, I like spending time with family and friends, and me and Deetra both enjoy music, so we love going to all different types of concerts and various types of music.
What was the last one you attended?
The last one we attended was the Interfaith Gospel concert, which was pretty good. The Paramount Theater. That was just a couple of weeks ago.
Audience, just so you know, my wife Sandra's sitting here too, so if she starts coughing, you know, she'll get up and go to the bathroom and try to get out of this thing, but she might have to ask her a question or two, but just so you know, there is four of us here. Okay. John, how large is your family? And by that I mean, we know you are parents of two young men. But thinking about the last few years, can you tell us how many nieces and nephews you have fed in this house on a daily basis, including the weekend?
When I think of nieces and nephews, I also think of friends. We have an extended family.
I'm trying to limit it to nieces and nephews because of the age group.
Okay. Nieces and nephews.
On a daily basis?
Well, sort of like on a weekend.
I think we have as few as four and as many as 10 or 12 on the weekend. That would drop by at any time, expecting dinner.
Okay. All right. So it warrants a large dining room table.
Okay.
Let me ask you, how did you two choose First Baptist as your church of choice?
You know, when I first met Deetra, she was going to a Methodist church in Oakland. I wasn't attending church. Once I changed my life around, I started attending Union Baptist Church, and then we moved to Pittsburgh. We went to a wedding years ago at First Baptist, and because we knew of the church, we were drawn back there, and we heard the pastor, and I don't know if I should say his name, First Baptist speak, Pastor Henry Perkins, and when I heard him encourage the congregation to not only listen to him, but to study the word for themselves, to learn the word of God, to make sure that everything he's saying is in line with the word of God, that drew me to First Baptist Church.
I think we had visited with some friends on several occasions, and it wasn't until after I had my second child, Joshua, John and I continued to visit, and I think First Baptist kind of chose us as well, and listening to the pastor preach, and the whole worship service, and the congregation, the warmth that we got from the congregation, we were drawn to that church.
I can attest to that, because my wife and I, actually went there at the request of a neighbor in our cul-de-sac, and I was impressed with Reverend Perkins myself.
Good teaching and very encouraging. Like I said, he encouraged you to pick up the Bible and study the Word for yourself. You know, he encouraged you to build your own relationship with Christ.
So, John, remember your experiences as a kid during Christmas time? How have you seen it change from then up to today?
Well, it's really not many changes. Christmas has always been commercialized, even for me as growing up. As a child, I can remember seeing the commercialism of Christmas. Back then, when we were going to church as a kid, there were more Christmas programs in the church all throughout the holiday season, several different churches, because we're always at a lot of different churches as a child. I think that's the difference that I see now. Well, maybe it's because I'm just attending one church, but I don't see as many different Christmas programs around that focus on the birth of Christ.
Deidre, same question?
I think the thing, growing up for me, and Christmas and the things that I remember was the commercialism of it, and being happy to get toys and seeing the toys. But John grew up in a Christian household, and they went to church often. And by the time my mom was remarried to Vietnam, I didn't go to church as often growing up. So what I knew was getting toys at Christmas, and that's how I equated it until being an adult and finding Christ and learning for myself and reading the Bible. What I was going to get from my different pictures.
So how did you both try to ensure that type of Christmas spirit was experienced by your boys? And I mean, especially the church aspect of it.
You know, we kind of encourage and teach them about Christ throughout the year. At an early age, we started with basic Bible stories, and I remember we purchased the Bible stories for kids.
And reading to them.
And
I think that's where it starts, is at a young age. You don't wait until they get older. The more you teach them, the better they understand, and they continue to want more.
And you would be surprised at some of the things that the kids learn at an early age where, you know, we don't even think about it, but then they can mention things. My son Isaiah, he mentioned things about the Bible and about this, and he knew it at an early age. And, you know, sometimes correcting us.
Kind of makes you want to pat yourself on the back and say, oh, okay.
Well, they get this.
Yeah.
And they know, you know, we talk taught them so that they would apply the teachings of the Bible and Christ to their life. Mm-hmm. And they do that.
Mm-hmm.
They know there's no situation that happens that they can't go to the Bible.
I think that foundation is vitally important. As you said, they started growing up and started getting into teen years, so
mm-hmm.
to speak. Don't you think?
Yes, yes. It is very important to teach them, you know, that they have a direct relationship, that mom and dad is not going to always be there. So you can pray to the same God that we pray to.
I want to go back to this commercialization of Christmas. So what do you think of the commercialization of our Christmas holiday season? And by season, I mean, it seems like now we start shortly after Halloween and go all the way to January 5th.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been extended. And, folks, as you know, because we've talked about it before, the black dollar is spent heavily. I mean, they rely on the black dollar, so they target us, trying to pull our strings. When I say they, I mean that the corporations see this, and they're moving to gain from us.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't care what position they put us in financially.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to increase their
bottom line.
Their bottom line. And there's a big increase in the advertisement and the targeting of certain people through commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Through commercial. It's almost heartbreaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sort of reminds me of my wife and I live in Milwaukee. Doesn't matter.
Long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. That works. But the thing I used to see at that time, and you know, if you're from back east, you love the four seasons. You love the spring. You
mm-hmm.
love the fall.
Yeah.
When we left Milwaukee, everything was sort of together. You couldn't tell. I mean, the weather was different. You know, the only you knew when November or December came around, yeah, it was going to be a little snow, and then it got cold. But other than that, you know, the fall felt like the summer sometimes, and the summer felt like that. Sort of reminds me of these holidays, you know, when you start seeing Christmas decorations in whatever store alongside the Halloween decorations,
right.
You go, you know, you start scratching your head.
Yeah, and you wonder if the true meaning of Christmas or the purpose is getting lost through all this. So that's just when the church comes in, and we got to reiterate Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the reason that we celebrate Christmas, and we got to put him in the forefront of, like we say, focus, keep our focus on Jesus and his walk.
Yeah. Because I remember, you know, going downtown in Milwaukee, you would see, you know, the birth of Christ displayed,
mm-hmm.
you know, the statue of Joseph, Mary, the little Christ, everything. You see less and less of that now.
Right.
Well, even in the corporate world, they don't like to say Christmas
mm-hmm.
around that. They want to celebrate and join the festivities, but they want to call it holiday parties
yeah.
and holiday gatherings instead of, you know, The reason that we want to celebrate this time is because of the birth of Christ.
Right.
They want to just show the commercial aspect of it.
Yeah.
He's still got to preach.
Yeah, without I'm sitting here shaking my head on everything he's saying because I feel it the same exact way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, how do you feel? Oh, I should say, how do you keep your family and yourself entrenched into the true meaning of Christmas while enjoying the commercial festivities too?
I think we never, ever, there isn't a day, Christmas or otherwise, that we don't. That's a daily thing for us. And we talk to our kids about even my nieces. If we're sitting down having, I remember one Christmas we were having breakfast and the younger nieces were here, and John asked everybody, and they all get kind of antsy because they know Uncle's going to ask a question, a serious question, and he's like, well, what do you think about Christmas? What does Christmas mean to you? And he asked them to each they all got it. You know, they understand threatening them and telling them they weren't going to get a gift if they had a wrong one.
But don't get me wrong, I love getting gifts. I like to give a gift. But you know, really, the greatest gift we have is Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way me and Dita handle things is like, we don't wait till Christmas
mm-hmm.
to show our love for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can buy her something any time of the year,
mm-hmm.
throughout the year, and vice versa. We don't have to wait till Christmas time to say that. But you do see a lot of extra giving around Christmas time
mm-hmm.
in the commercial aspect. I mean, we have
adopt families,
mm-hmm.
and we do this ourselves as a family. I think we adopt a family. We do it also through words, so we're putting our hands out several different areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do the giving through the church,
mm-hmm.
And all that increase
during
this
time.
But all that increase during this time of year. But I think you gotta really stay focused because it can drain you. Also,
yeah.
It can be a draining time for a lot of people, and that's why I say keep your focus on Jesus, because you also start missing the ones that are not here, and I think that's what
yeah.
we focus on.
Yeah.
We celebrated Christmas probably this with future sister Teddy, where she was, Christmas Day was always with her,
mm-hmm.
and she, you know, put out a good spread, and she, I mean, decorations and everything.
But
we
a
had
lot
so
of love.
Good time
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
her. And she's no longer with us, along with my mom and Mama Jean. So we also go back to those people, and we also want to remember them during this time. And we, and a lot of times we spend talking about the past, the times that we've had.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. And of course, your kids grow up having those Christmases each year.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
how they form opinions of what Christmas is.
And memories.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We still laugh about
yeah.
different things that happen at Christmas time.
Family.
And it can be, like John said, a stressful time for people because a lot of people feel that they have to go out and buy a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cause financial burdens on them. But, you know, you still take that credit card out and you're
yeah.
like, oh, I need to get this person a gift and
yeah.
get that person a gift and
for
the season.
As we get older, we get a little bit more smarter because I know, you know, when we're
yeah.
young, we're out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Because we did it.
Deidre, do you have a favorite moment spent with one of your kids at this time of year?
I have so many wonderful moments. My oldest son, just seeing him, of course we did, God and I did the stories about Santa Claus and
mm-hmm.
all of that when they were young. They had all the innocence, and just seeing him wake up, you know, John and I staying up all night and making
mm-hmm.
sure all the toys were put together and underneath the tree, and he couldn't sleep all night, and just seeing his eyes light up
mm-hmm.
to run into the living room and see all the toys underneath the tree that he
mm-hmm. You know, it was not only during that time, because I can remember as Isaiah got older, and we used to also talk about the tooth fairy, but I was like, it's time that this boy knows. So he wrote a letter to the tooth fairy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and asked the tooth fairy to leave a picture.
He was getting older.
He was getting older.
He was wondering, okay, is there really a Santa Claus? Is there really an Easter Bunny?
Oh,
you
wanted a picture of the tooth fairy.
Yeah. He wanted a picture of the tooth fairy.
So what we did, we
told him to write a note, ask the tooth fairy what he wanted, and he asked the tooth fairy to leave a picture because he wanted to know what the tooth fairy looked like.
So in the morning when he got up and
mm-hmm.
went under his pillow and got the envelope with the money in it, and a picture of me and Dita.
He didn't say anything. So we asked him, he was like, well, did the tooth fairy leave you? Because you know who the tooth fairy is? Like, this is our out now, we can tell you. And he's like, no, she only left the picture of you and Dad. She only left the picture of you and Dad. So that's when we had to break it to him.
And I thought that was just a story that we'll never forget.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, now, this time of year always bring about a lot of activities put on by our church. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. Keep in mind, I am talking about all churches and maybe even different denominations than Baptists. Do you feel that churches in general put on a good demonstration for our young to show them what Christmas really means?
Well, I know what our church at First Baptist has done, and I think they do an excellent job. I'm not just saying that because my son has written some of the plays, the holiday and Christmas plays.
Oh, okay.
But yes, church as a whole, I think they do a wonderful job in demonstrating. And I think Don and I visited a couple of other churches.
Yeah, we visited Hilltop and Richmond for their Christmas program.
And they do a wonderful job.
Yeah, they have a woman that has a beautiful voice there.
Singing, what do we call the Living Christmas Tree?
Yeah, the Living Christmas Tree.
Amazing.
Like I said, we like music. So same as Dietrich, you know, and it's not just because my son Isaiah wrote several of the holiday plays for the church, but I see some of the performances that they do are the recreation of the birth of Christ and the resurrection and the death, and the way they display it through words of the Bible. Mm-hmm. I mean, using the Bible, it's like it brings it to life. So you know the true meaning, get the true meaning of Christmas. So I think they really do a good job of putting the true meaning of Christmas in front of us for those that want to listen and accept it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I guess I should say I should ask, what about the rest of the year? And keeping in mind, as I said, I guess where I'm going here is I'm trying to get to the fact that, you know, our children are drifting, some of them, and I think the church, maybe, in my opinion, should be part of that to attract children, to give them that solid foundation, or at least to co-sign what the parents are giving.
You know, because like Dietra said earlier, I was brought up going to church, and I can remember even going to the Boys and Girls Club and learning the books of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Learned all the books of the Bible in order of learning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got in my teen years, mm-hmm. I strayed away. And like I said, when I met Dietra, not right then I met her, but she started going to a church and I wasn't going.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, her and one of her friends invited me to go to church. And at the time, I felt my life was in such disarray. I got to the front steps of the church,
mm-hmm.
and put my foot on the steps and told them, no, I'll see you guys after church. I can't step in there right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt my life was going. So I think with teaching at a young age of foundation, you may stray away, but you always have a chance to go back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we should focus on. And not only that, but keeping them also. With my life, I think I was allowed to stray,
mm-hmm.
and that caused me a lot of heartache and pain, because with my parents separating,
mm-hmm.
And things changing, and I'm having to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Really quick, church became not a priority for me. And then, but my mom, even when I started back to going to church, I had to kind of reel her in and focus her on church, because she lost interest in church over a giving matter,
mm-hmm.
years ago. I mean, because she was, we were poor,
mm-hmm.
she didn't have much to give,
mm-hmm.
and they made fun of her offering for that.
Yeah.
And I had to keep telling her, Mom, that's one man.
Yeah.
That's not Christ.
Yeah.
You know, we'll reel her back in after I started learning more, and like, you know, that's not what it's all about, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the foundation, I think, to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, there's many people like me that don't get that opportunity to come back.
Well, and plus, you know, you sound a lot like I was. I mean, I've thing I put up on this, but you know, I was raised a Catholic. I went to a Catholic school, which caused a lot of questions among, you know, for me, especially questions I used to ask in school, but we won't go into that because that's a whole another long story. But the point is I was still drawn to Baptist teaching rather than Catholic because I, for me, it's just that I remember going into the Catholic Church and seeing so many gold accoutrements, the priest was wearing gold, and this, that, and the other, and the candlestick was gold, and then I'd come out of that church, and I'd go home back to my neighborhood, and I'd see all these poor people, and I'd go, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture, you know? Mm-hmm. But at any rate, that's not to, you know, to jump on the Catholic Church and this, that, and the other, because we need all denominations in order to, you know, to teach the Word of God out there.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, sometimes it causes confusion in a kid, which I was. But it took me a long time and a lot of time to talk to God to say, well, okay, you know me better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular personal relationship I had with him, or still have with him, sort of helped me, led me back. And again, we're still talking about the foundation,
mm-hmm.
you know, which we started out this conversation saying we need to teach our children not only good manners when they're 2 and 3,
mm-hmm.
but at least religion. I know, you know, I'm a liberal, well, I'm probably more conservative now, but there's a lot of talk about, well, we shouldn't pray in school and this, that, and the other, but I mean, I don't see the problem in having prayer in school.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly, because that's what this country was actually built upon. I mean, even on our money, we say in God we
mm-hmm.
trust.
Mm-hmm.
How can we say we trust God, but then don't want to allow Him to be a part of our lives? That kind of, that whole thing kind of gets to me. It's like, in one aspect, you say, in God we trust, but you're allowing other people to come in and dictate. So we're a country that's built on in God we trust, you know.
Okay.
Got to continue to trust God even with our leaders,
mm-hmm.
Our president. You know, we pray for our president constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, all our presidents have shown, well, all the ones that I can remember, so that they trust God in some kind of way. They mention God in their speeches and it draws people to. If our leaders are that way,
mm-hmm.
how can we let someone else come in and dictate what we
do? That's confusing, because the president puts his hand on the Bible to be sworn in for office.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to court, you know, you put your hand on the Bible to tell the truth. You know, so, you know, we tend to send mixed messages about this, and all of a sudden, you know, we're going to get on with the kids because they're praying, and you know, before, wait a minute, what's that? And again, I went to a Catholic church, so we prayed all
the time. You know, I'm going to mention something that you said earlier also about the gold and stuff being in the Catholic churches. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of men don't attend churches today, is because a lot of men have the mentality, you know, oh, I'm not going to support that man, the
mm-hmm.
pastor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, back when I was younger, they used to say, have him driving a Cadillac,
mm-hmm.
and, you know.
I heard that, yep, that was in
it. But I think we have to kind of change that stigmatism and not focus on the man of God, but focus on God. All they're doing is bringing the word. I often tell people, pastor's main purpose is to teach people the way of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's doing that, we don't have to look at his personal life, because all he's doing is teaching. It's up to us to study the Word and affirm the Word in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and focus on our own lives.
Yeah. That's pretty much, I mean, I think all young men, and I'm going to say all young men, because a lot of young men, including myself, have that same picture, you know, when I was out there in the street, I see the pastor, well, not necessarily a pastor, but a deacon out there shooting dice and whatever else everybody else is doing, and then you wonder, you say, well, go to church, wait a minute. So the meaning, you have to realize why you're actually going to church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to church.
And, but, yeah, and again, as leaders, we got to, you know, I serve on the deacon board. Mm-hmm. As leaders, you gotta realize that what you do can affect somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing that you can do, mm-hmm. is affect somebody else's Christian growth.
Mm-hmm.
So, gotta be careful of what we do in front of people and how we...
Especially our children, yeah. Because we keep going back to our children, and that foundation is vitally important for them, especially today with things going on, and so that's an important thing.
That's very important to teach our kids.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, trust the parents, and trust yeah. what you're telling them and teaching them.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time for having us in your house. Mrs. Hampton, did you want to say something? She's shaking her head no.
No, I don't have anything to say.
Oh, no.
But did you enjoy our conversation?
I really did. I really did. And Owen the other day, you know, I'm all down the lane, and of course it goes into the gutter, and you know my mouth. And I was like...
Well, we know, but they might not know. You
well,
know.
Sometimes my mouth... It's lost by itself. So, I had to stop and think about the group of people I was with. And I said, oh, we'll do better the next time. But it was right there on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, now that's one thing that I do tell the young people too, our kids, is like sometimes they may slip and say something, and I'm like, so we like having casual conversations with our boys, and mm-hmm. hang out with their friends, and you talk this way,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a
door.
Mm-hmm. So watch what you say.
Yeah.
Always
yeah. had that conversation where is that when I got out of the service, got home from the army, I heard myself talking, and all of a sudden I had to stop and wonder who is that talking?
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus Christ, dark man, I was too blessed. Well, as I said, I want to thank you. I really enjoyed having this conversation with the Taylors.
And we enjoyed having you in our home always. We always enjoy having conversations with you. And thank you. Thank you so much for doing what you do.
Oh, no problem.
You do a wonderful job representing us.
Ms. Deacon was going to be sad when we found out she wasn't. Okay, and that's it. I want to thank you, and we'll see you next time. We'll probably have a different conversation sometime later on in 2015, but we'll have you back.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're a good parent.
Amen.
Thank you.
God bless you.
I get to be with the kids.
Oh, that might work.
All right. That's the end of the interview, and I want to thank again John and Deetra Taylor for their input. I don't like to break up a recorded interview because my attempt is to let the discussion flow. It's not like a live interview, so hopefully you were engaged. Let's take a seasonal musical break again with the Temptations from their Motown compact classic CD, The Temptations Give Love at Christmas. The song is called The Little Drummer Boy. Guest for tonight's show. I'm calling in now.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. This is Codis. How are you doing, Faith?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Just fine. Just fine. Yeah, I would like to, for the audience, I would like to introduce our next guest. She is based in the Atlanta, Georgia area. She is a fellow member and blogger for our local professional net, the Networking Source. The site is located at professionalnet.ning.com. That's professionalnet.ning.com. She has her story of life's cruelties and disappointment, but chooses to channel her energy toward helping others, especially the children. So, Faith, welcome to the show. As I said, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well this evening. Thank you.
Well, good, good. Anybody in the Bay Area you want to send out your holiday wishes to?
Well, I would like to wish a Merry Christmas and Safe New Year to everybody in the Bay Area. I mean, the Lord has put so many people across my path. If I listed them all, it would take up the whole show. So I just send out. And I would like to acknowledge my son, Nathan. He's not in the Bay Area, but he is back in California attending college.
Okay.
And I wanted to acknowledge his fiance Shannon, and of course, a very good lifelong friend, Dr. Cleo. You know her as Angela.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I'm sure they'll get the message. I wanted to start out with the blog that you actually did in ProfessionalNet. I was impressed by the simplicity, yet very pointed blog you posted, entitled "Seven Things All Children Should Hear." It was short and precise. Would you give us those seven things and tell us what led you to write such a powerful blog?
Okay, starting with number one, I love you. Every child needs to be told that more than once. Number two, I'm proud of you. Number three, excuse me, I'm sorry. I think that, you know, none of us are perfect, and we as parents, when we make mistakes, we need to be an example for our children. And it starts by acknowledging when, you know, we make those mistakes and apologize. Number four, I forgive you. Number five, I'm listening. Number six, this is your responsibility. And number seven, I believe in you. You've got what it takes. You know, I made a little mention when I put that on the blog that, you know, we get upset with our children. We all do. You know, we want them to be perfect little angels. We want them to do everything perfectly and 100%, but none of us are perfect, not us and not our children. And we have to remember and be careful when we're dealing with our children, the words that we speak, because nobody does it perfect the first time out. You know, sometimes it might take one, two, three times before you figure out, oh, this is how it works. And we need to encourage our children while they're trying to figure it out. It's like they need an arena to work with in order to work with these new knowledges that we give them. And, I mean, we had to practice with them. We tested them and figured out, okay, I can do this and I can't do that and I better not do that. But you don't discourage a child by demeaning them, by tearing them down. You're stupid, you can't do anything right, and all that does is destroy the spirit of the child, and it determines how they view themselves. And being that I have experienced that, I know what it takes out of a child. So when I put that there, it was as a reminder that we need to build our children up, let them grow from their mistakes, because without mistakes, how can they grow? The mistakes means they're trying, And as long as they give effort, then we need to acknowledge their effort.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it sort of brought to mind sometime when we're working on these high-powered jobs, and don't necessarily have to be a high-powered job, just a job itself that has a lot of stress. And then when we come home, we need to realize that we are coming home to a child who's been looking forward all day to seeing us.
Exactly, exactly. And they don't want to, they don't need to be told, I'll talk to you later, because later never seems to come. And, you know, stop making all that noise, just be quiet. And we want to shut them up. And then when it comes time for them to speak up in school and they're afraid to speak and we're hollering at them why they're not talking and why aren't you speaking up in class and why aren't you doing this and that, it's because we told them to shut up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they're confused. We confuse our children with mixed messages because of our own everyday challenges. And, yes, life is hard, but we cannot shut up our children.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find a way to leave work at work and come home and be present for our children. We have got to.
Yeah, yeah. Can you give us a little background as to why you became so involved with children issues?
Well, being a survivor of abuse myself, I understand the challenges and obstacles that many of these kids they face, as well as the hardships that they endure. I mean, being on the other side of the fence, I recall how worthless I felt, but I realize how important it is to build a positive self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essential to the abilities that we put forth in achieving whatever goal we put before us. I mean, if we don't teach our children, who will? You know, where will they learn what they need to know? How else can they work through the knowledge that we give them unless we provide that arena form that I mentioned before? You know, it's the testing of using and applying that enables us and them to gain the understanding of how to go about accomplishing what we set forth, you know. So we have to acknowledge the mistakes and the mishaps as part of the process, as part of the learning process. And instead of jumping down their throats and telling them they're dumb and they're stupid and they're never going to amount to nothing and they can't figure it out and don't do nothing right, we need to applaud their effort and encourage them to not quit. Don't give up. Keep applying yourself. You're doing a great job. I'm so proud of you. And these positive words, it builds their self-esteem because all our children try to do is please us anyway.
That's true.
That's all they're trying to do is please us. And if we encourage them throughout their development, then we will see the children, the sons and daughters that we want to see because they'll believe in themselves. Their self-esteem comes from how we look at them.
Yeah.
I know for myself, it took me years to overcome the negative words that were spoken over me because you hear a thing long enough, you believe it. Just like the word says, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. Well, whether that's positive word or negative word, it will stick. And you begin to believe what you've heard consistently, then you live it out. And it's a vicious cycle. But it starts with what comes out of our mouth, not theirs.
And as you say, you know, parent gets frustrated when they start looking at their 14, 15, 16-year-old start acting out in different ways, and then they wonder, well, who is this person? And they don't realize that they might have contributed to that in the early years themselves.
Right, exactly, exactly. And sometimes we get to the point where parent and child have to be separated, and it's not an easy thing. I will share a personal experience. I feel like I need to right there.
Okay.
My son got to that age where, as far as, you know, development goes, he pretty much lost his mind. He forgot I was the parent, he was the child. Fortunately, I had a place to send him. I sent him to his uncle. I didn't want my son to become a part of the system. I sent him to his uncle. We've been without his dad for several years. My husband passed when my son was first born. So he didn't have a father figure. But I believe that whatever family dysfunction may be going on, uncles are important when fathers aren't around. And when they're willing to give of themselves into the life of a young man, it can make the difference between that child going too far astray or just wandering a little bit and getting back right.
Right.
Fortunately, in my son's case, he got back right. He remembered the lessons I taught him. Plus, it didn't hurt that, you know, uncle's a little harder than mom, so it was kind of like, oh, you know, I'd rather go home, so let me act right, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever makes it work, you use what you
That's
have.
Right. That's right.
But at the same
right.
time, you know, praying over my son and believing in those prayers with my, so between me praying, my brother's doing, my son got what he needed. And right now, he's 20 years old, and he is a productive young man. He is working and earning his own way. He's attending college. And, you know, he has his little struggles and whatnot, but he's not quitting. And that's
yeah.
what's important, you know. And we talk on a consistent basis, and he's always saying, Mom, thank you. I needed that behind whooping. You knew what you were doing, okay? You know?
Yeah, it sort
and
of makes
to
you
hear
feel
your
good,
child
man,
say
yeah.
that, it just
yeah.
kind of, you know, it lifts your heart and you go, okay, I didn't mess up.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We have to put in place everything that our children need. I mean, being a single parent, dealing with my own issues, fears, obstacles,
mm-hmm.
and disabilities, it
mm-hmm.
doesn't make life easy, but you don't sit up and say, I can't, you know, I don't have it. You find it. There's
right.
always a way to find it. If you don't have it, someone does. And we can't be so proud we don't ask for help, especially when it comes to what our children need.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they didn't ask to come here. They didn't bust in, you know, crash the house party. We brought them here. We created them, you know.
Right.
And as parents, responsible parents,
mm-hmm.
it is our obligation to make whatever sacrifices are necessary that they have what they need. I'm not talking about material things that they want. I'm talking about what they need to be successful in life.
Right.
That's our responsibility to provide it for them. And when we don't, we cheat them of what's rightfully theirs.
That's true.
So yeah. I hold myself and every parent to a higher standard when it comes to our children. We should never look at our child and say, I don't care if you need it for school. I can't do it. I ain't got the money. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many resources out there to provide
mm-hmm.
for children that don't have the financial means to get what they need.
Right.
It's up to us to look for it. We're the parent.
Mm-hmm.
We look. We ask.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't have them out there trying to find it and figure it out. No.
Mm-hmm.
Until a certain age, we are responsible for putting everything they need in place to make sure they weather that storm of puberty and get where they need to go. Because
okay.
I see too many high school students, it's like they're being thrown away and set aside. And they're not garbage.
Right.
They're our future. They're our treasures. They're our gifts.
Yeah.
And we got to do better by them.
Yeah, exactly. And which is a perfect segue. I know that you are extremely proud of your work in the Homework Club, whose mantra is expanding mindsets to build brighter futures. Can you give us your take on who the program is designed to reach?
Yes. Well, right there, I would talk about the Title I program.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Sorry. Title I originated for elementary and secondary act of 1965. It is now
mm-hmm.
associated with Part A of the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest national educational program, and it provides additional educational funds to local schools and agencies. And a Title I school has a higher percentage of low-income families. So the additional funds are intended to help ensure that all children, no matter economic status, will meet state standards and receive an equal, you know, quality education.
Mm-hmm.
And because many of these students from the Title I schools are considered at risk to drop out or fail to meet standards or fail to graduate, they become the target population for our program.
Okay. All right. And how did you become involved in the program?
Actually, I designed the program. It began as an intervention that I did when I was working with the Santa Cruz School District, and I worked alternative education in Watsonville, California. Several of the young men that were part of the program were in their fifth year, and they were ready to, they were going to release them, aside from the fact that they weren't able to graduate or meet the state standards. And I saw so much hopelessness there. It was being involved with the gangs, taking the wrong route to survive was exactly what they were doing. And it was like, okay, how do I get them engaged? I need to show them that there's another way out. And that's pretty much where this started at. One of the things that I did with them was to take their hobbies, their little passions, whether it was graffiti, was that's a form of art. So that's what I would show them. Anybody that liked to dub music or DJ, I showed them the media side of that. So I associated their gifts and talents with actual careers that they could obtain. And once they realized they actually had something to offer, it was easy to get them to understand how education would help them to get there. Then it became, how do we get out of the situation we're in? So because my program, what's unique about my program is the fact that I combine counseling with teaching. Instead of sending them out of the classroom to the principal or to, you know, somebody else, I dealt with them right there in the classroom. This is what I was allowed by the lead teacher in the class. Because I had built such a positive rapport with the young men and they responded to me well, we made group counseling part of the curriculum, but I also offered one-on-one counseling for them because I did hold the position as on-site counselor and then filling in as instructional aide and the teacher making me the student teacher. It made it easy to put it all together in one package. And the students were very responsive to it, so the counseling part of it, I was able to help them to throw out the garbage, if you will, take all of the things that they had so impacted inside of them that were hindering them being able to focus on anything other than the life they were living. It was taking all the negative out, all the things that weren't theirs to deal with, the things that this is your parents, this is not yours, this is what you have to do, this is your responsibility, oh, that's not yours. Literally unpacking the bag and just throwing out the trash. Oh, yeah. And once the counseling assisted in helping them to really let go of a lot of things that they weren't responsible for, it left room now to fill them with the knowledge that they needed. It unfolded in front of my eyes. It was more successful than I had expected it to be. But every one of those young men that was supposed to graduate at the end of that year graduated.
Six months
into the program, they were at grade level. At the end of the year, they were literally walking across the stage. And several of them were the first in their families to do so. And it was an awesome moment.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes. It was amazing to see. I was so proud of them, but it more than that, they were proud of themselves. You know, they could stand up and articulate. They could express themselves, and they could prove themselves sitting down and doing the work. That meant the most to me. And I didn't think about it at the time, but when I got here and I saw so many students look just like them, but so far spread throughout these schools and the accreditation problems, I realized, wait a minute. That intervention can be made into something permanent that should be in every single school. And that's my goal, is to start it here as an actual program. Prove the numbers that it is an effective program, and then go forward to having it implemented in all the schools. But I want to start at the high school level, and I have a reason why. I see so many programs available for elementary and some for middle school. But when these kids get to high school, there is no resource in place for them. Everybody doesn't have Sylvan money to get privately tutored. A lot of people don't feel comfortable with the in-home tutoring that many of the districts are now offering. And it's like, okay, there's got to be another solution. the homework club would actually be something that is housed within the school during school hours that the students can actually access. It would work hand-in-hand with the school, not competing with the teachers, but taking the trouble students, the behavioral risk and the at-risk students, after they report to their teachers, reporting down the hall to us where we would counsel them and then work one-on-one with them, because we'd have three teachers and one counselor to every 20 students.
No.
That would give them that one-on-one attention they need to actually get them where they need to be so they can perform, you know, academically.
Okay. All right, Faith, we're going to take a little break here and let you kind of get yourself slow down a minute. I wanted to play another season musical treat. This one is more about missing one at the time of the year than an actual Christmas song, because we were playing Christmas songs earlier.
Okay.
No, it's not Please Come On for Christmas. It's by another one of my favorite artists, Miss Aleta Adams. Here is Get Here. So we can take a little break here while we listen to this selection, Faith, okay?
Okay.
You better make it soon. You can You can.
Well, that was for the lovers out there, those who are waiting for someone to show up on Christmas Day. You know how that go. That's what I played it for. So after thinking of it too, you know. Faith, on the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001, and I know that, or at least I got the impression that it was more or less a testing situation, whereas is that they were trying to pass certain tests or geared toward passing certain tests. Can you comment on that now, or was that the case, or am I just mixed up here?
No, I wouldn't say that you're mixed up. I mean, the educational system, just like anything else, state, federal government run, is full of bureaucracy. Every district mm-hmm. in Georgia has a cutback, has cut back their teachers. They've increased student-to-teacher ratios, and they're adding furlough days to cut spending to meet annual budgets. No Child Left Behind and other federal mandates have really kind of hurt the system because it's tied the teachers' hands from really teaching because mm-hmm. they're only teaching to the test, which mm-hmm. means the students aren't given enough time to actually maintain the information. They don't really grasp the understanding of it. They can memorize to pass the test, but past that, mm-hmm. they can't even maintain it in the classroom. And so right. it was meant to help, but it's really hurt the educational system. Students can't apply the information, and the sole goal is really just to pass the test. And the sad thing is, if the student scores aren't high enough, they lose funding. So, you know, it's a catch-22, caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
I mean, and it's no surprise that you've had cheating scandals and, you know, districts in threat of losing accreditation behind the cheating scandals, because mm-hmm. everybody's so focused on the money that you're going to get to pass the test, so so many students have to pass the test, and mm-hmm. education has gone out of the window. Again, our children suffer because of it. Right now, we have two districts where they lost accreditation, and every one of the students that graduated during that time, they're holding a useless piece of paper because colleges won't even look at them. And it's like, how do we help with this, okay? Currently, Georgia specifically is 44th out of 50 states for the highest rate of dropouts and ranked 48th in education,
mm-hmm.
okay? So mm-hmm. we got serious issues, and I don't know, I haven't looked into how it is across the board, but are we the only state that's going through struggles like this, you know? And it really made us look, because I'm, you know, I have a colleague that I've met with, and she is as passionate about this as I am, and she works with me trying to really tailor homework club to meet the needs of the students, and at the same time to assist with trying to rectify the whole accreditation issue, because homework club itself is a ongoing assessment tool. When you apply it, there's no need for cheating.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be a way to help regain accreditation for the schools. And I don't know how we would implement it, but try to find a way to incorporate a program that would help those students that have already graduated but yet need something in addition, so that the colleges will acknowledge their diplomas.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a sad situation here.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's the first time I've heard of that. So have the authorities moved in some type of direction to try to rectify the issue?
They're still trying to figure out how to rectify the issue at this point.
Oh.
It's kind of like the districts are left on their own to figure out how to fix the problem. So, again, we're working to get the financing we need and complete what we need to, you know, put the prospectus together and being able to have all the legalese in place so that we can present Homework Club to these districts and sit down with them, show them how it works, and see if they're willing to let us come in. And that would be not a training ground. I mean, we've already proven it in California, but it would actually be an area where we could do some pilot programs to get the research to validate this would be an effective way to help the students and to help districts to stay out of that threat of losing accreditation.
What about parental involvement? Do you find that parents are getting more involved, or they're just kind of sitting by the wayside?
That's I don't think that they're sitting by the wayside by choice. I mean, you know, there are some situations where you do have parents that they were too young when they had their kids, so they don't understand the need to be involved. But while parent involvement is very important to student success, I mean, the economy itself is impacting that situation. Because whether you have a single parent home, which makes it even harder on the family, or you have both parents in the home, a lot of times what we're finding is that they're working 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet, which means they have no time to sit down with their children. So it's like, how are you going to get a parent to help a student who falls behind in pre-calculus or chemistry when they haven't seen this in over a decade themselves?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's not as much parent involvement, and more we're seeing less and less parents even show up to parent-teacher conferences. It's like pretty much a lot of people are very discouraged with the educational system as it is, especially in our area, because of all of the trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and we find too many parents that actually expect the teacher to do it all. And it's like, no, the teacher is supposed to support the parent's input. The teacher isn't supposed to take over the responsibility of the parent, but that's what's happening.
Well, I know you talked about it.
There's another problem I have with that. I'm sorry.
I know you talked a little bit about it before, but let me ask you, what would be your recommendation to try to improve that? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you don't have all the answers, just like no one person does, but what would be some of the things that you might want to see implemented in order to change the situation?
Well, as I said, a program similar to Homework Club or Homework Club itself that would remove the threat of cheating, teachers changing grades, by being a ongoing assessment program itself, there's no need, because you always know at what level students are operating, and it's tailored to address the need of the student no matter their skill level. So it's developed to work beautifully with differentiation instruction. Okay, so you might have 3 different student levels in the same classroom, say group A, B, and C. C can barely do the work and they don't really understand it. B is able to do the work, yet they don't understand the concept behind it, and A understands the concept and can reiterate it to you. They can explain it to you. Okay? It's not that you give them all the same work. Well, in a sense, it's the same work, but at different levels. So you're always challenging each group of students. Plus, we also encourage, you know, peer tutoring and peer review. So you teach the students collaboration and working together, all of that. And it eliminates the need of the desire to compete. Instead of competing, they're working together in groups. Okay? So it encourages collaboration. It also, performance of the students increases substantially when they're working together. They're able to talk it out. It's not so much the teacher at the board, but it's the students coming up and sharing what they have. And nobody knocks anybody for not having the right answer. They're able to call on their fellow students to come up and help them to write this problem out, and the whole class is able to benefit from it. But the part that they really enjoy is being able to be up in front of the classroom, and they get to explain how to solve the problems, how to work through them. I think we need more student participation, but we definitely need to include the parents to find a way to bring the parents in so they're able to see what it is their children are learning so that they can help them at home.
Okay. Well, Faith, it's been a pleasure to have you on our show. I know this, now that I've, you know, hear that, you know, you're talking, we're going to have you back sometime next year, and we'll start a little bit earlier where we could take up the entire show, because I'm anxious to follow this story to see how it is. So I'll get back to you in that respect. I know we can find your blogs on professionalnet.ning.com that I just mentioned. Do you have another
yes.
contact number or email address where interested parties can reach you?
Actually, I do. Your Turn at Hotmail. That's spelled
okay.
EURTURN at hotmail.com.
Okay.
And thank
All right.
you for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem. As I said, we'll be back sometime, probably, hopefully, before the end of the summer, or certainly in the summer before the school, you know, before the fall session starts. We'll see where
yes.
we are.
I
All right.
That.
With that, we wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We hope to hear you from you again, as I said, in 2015. Thanks, and have a good evening, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Goodbye. Let's play another favorite Cecil Knowles music selection. Once again, it's from the Temps Motown Compact Classic CD, The Temperature. Oh, the temperature. The Temptations Give Love at Christmas. It is their classic Silent Night. I wanted to make sure I got that one in. Here it is, Silent Night.
Was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In my mind, I want you to be free. What happened? what a joyous day. As I sit around by the fireplace, watching the gleaming tree, if I had one wish in this world,
to thank our guests John and Deetra Taylor, Faith Urie Turner, and everyone who participated in today's show. As always, we meet here at the Corner on a bi-monthly basis. I am your host, Cotis Hampton II. Just so you and the audience know, we do have a chat room capability here. You can even chat among yourselves while you wait to ask our guests or myself a question. Since we always sprinkle our show with 5 to 6 musical cuts from our favorite artists, let us know your favorites and I will try to get them in. If there are any comments, you can post them right on the show's comment section. Please join us again on our regular day of Wednesday, January 14th at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our topic for the next show centers on 2015 and what is new. My son, Richard Tycoon, will be here talking about his new release, Chapter 34. He promises to bring a few surprises. My new book has been published and released entitled The Episodic Thoughts of Hamp. We will have more surprises as we play with our format by adding a new segment. I'm telling you, 2015 is going to be a blast around here, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, a very special Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you and yours. Thanks for the support of this show, our blogs and comments on how we are doing. As I said, this is only the beginning. Details of our guests and other specifics will be available on our websites, including LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as other social media. If you can't join us while we are live, you can always tune in to our website and listen to the show at your leisure. Hey, I'll be talking to you on the other side of the calendar year of 2015. Happy New Year. For now, peace, and thank God tonight for making it such a wonderful day and a more promising tomorrow. Good night, and take it easy.